You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Margot Crump. Margot, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Where are you? You're in Texas now, is that correct?
Yes, I am located in Houston.
In Houston. And before I just jump into your work, how is Houston for an artist as a city with exhibits, collectors, galleries? What's the story on Houston as an artist?
It's a really interesting place to be an artist, actually. People don't know that about Houston for the most part. We're the most diverse city in the nation, which is kind of like a hidden fact about us. We also have really fantastic cultural institutions, world-class museums, really wonderful galleries. There's also a lot of financial support for individual artists, lots of grants, opportunities. It's a good place. Cost of living is pretty good too, which always helps.
Now, you said there's a lot of financial support for individual artists for in terms of grants. Those are grants that are local for Houston or regional area?
Yeah, we have, there are some regional grants, but yes, we have local grants that come from hotel tax. And then we have a few that are like redistribution of funds grants that I think come from the Andy Warhol Foundation originally, and then local institutions distribute them as they see fit through proposals and things like that.
But the hotel tax, how does that work? That's not like percent for arts that they have in a lot of other states. That's something else. That's a kind of unique program, isn't it?
Sort of like that. So it's just a percentage of hotel tax is used. We have the Houston Arts Alliance, and they are the ones who take that hotel tax. They take in proposals, and they have a whole bunch of different for a variety of levels. They also do arts organizations as well as individual artists. And then the money is distributed through a panel that looks over the proposals, but it originally comes from hotel tax.
That's kind of fascinating. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's an unusual model. I don't think that's the case in most other states. I don't know for sure, but I haven't heard that before. That's not the case in New York, for example, or Connecticut, as far as I know.
I didn't know it was that unusual, but yeah, it's great. I received one of those grants last year, and it was really great for my practice. I was able to purchase a lot of photo equipment that I didn't have and work on a kind of project I'd never done before, which was really great for growth. It's wonderful.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. It could be that project that you just mentioned that you got the grant for, or what you're doing in your studio at the moment.
Well, I just had a show in August at Women in Their Work in Austin that finished up a really big body of work I've been working on for a few years. So I'm kind of an in-between phase right now where there's still some things that I'm kind of itching to do with that last body of work, which was sort of looking at power in the body using gender and nature as a way to explore power relationships, like the constructs of gender and nature, and hunting and courting. So the work mostly had to do with sort of like animal bodies and loosely sort of anthropomorphic bodies. But right now I'm actually in the midst of researching a new project. It's very, very different for me. I'm looking at the history of witch executions in America, which is pretty timely for today, given that it's Halloween. And I'm linking the history of these individuals and their executions and their trials to the discussions we're having right now about the silence of women and women breaking their silence. So it's sort of a photographic research project that is in very new stages, but that's what I'm doing.
And how will that manifest itself ultimately in work? I mean, your work is often
it's very
culturally
sculptural.
Based. Yeah.
Yes.
It's really
so
rough.
It's very sculptural, my work is. So this is super different for me. But what I'm imagining is that, so I'll sort of be making a pilgrimage with my partner who's doing the project with me. It's our first official collaboration together. We work with each other's projects sort of behind the scenes, but this is the first time we're doing it openly. So we'll go to the locations. We're going to photograph the sites. Sort of, I'm thinking about this as that memory is political, and what we choose to remember and what we choose to keep silent about says a lot about us and affects how we heal as a culture. So by going and visiting these sites, photographing, looking at how memory has been held or buried, just responding to being there, and then taking those photos and creating a web platform for them that is free and accessible. So not something you have to go to a gallery to see, not something you only can see for a few weeks or a few days, but something that is sort of endlessly available. I'm imagining it as, I guess, an absolutely not sculptural body of work, which is a little scary to think about working so differently, but also very exciting. And then the way I tend to work is that by doing these sort of off projects for me, ones that don't really fit, that sort of feeds the sculptural practice. So what I learn and experience through this research and this journey, I know will come back and feed the more object-based work. And you'll be able to see it in there when I'm done, I think. But obviously, I don't know how that'll look yet. It's in the future. But I'm excited.
That is exciting. And so tell me a little bit about this research now, because that sounds fascinating. And you're right. It's not only Halloween when we're doing this interview, but I think it resonates with our time, Me Too movement, and everything else. What are you finding so far in this research? Are you focusing on kind of the Salem witch trials kind of thing, or
something else? So I'm specifically focusing on the American witch trials, which Salem is obviously a big part of, and that's one of the few places where a lot of research has been done. For the most part, I've found that the witch trials, both in America and Europe and around the world, because they still happen today, sort of occupy the margins of history. And that's a really disturbing idea when you think about all the things that go into a witch trial and the torture and the fear, that we really don't spend that much time sort of dissecting why we do this, why this has happened, why we still are engaged in these activities. So what I've discovered is that there are, most of the sites are in the Northeast, but there are actually three sites in New Mexico, which is very interesting. Three Pueblo shamans were executed by the Spanish. So I was surprised by that. And those are some of the few men, for the most part, both in colonial America and in Europe, 80% of witch trial victims are women. So it feels a bit like a women's sort of project, but I think it also, you can blow it out and really look at it as otherness, and that people who are different who are oftentimes feared. So it really does reflect how we are as a society today. And the word witch trial has been thrown around by mostly men in power at the moment. And I think that going back and looking at what it actually meant to have a witch trial, what that actually looked like, the people who are often accused are, for the most part, the undesirables in the community, people without power. So it's very interesting to see how we're using that language right now in the present time.
That is fascinating. And how do you think that will, I know you don't know yet, but trying to imagine how that'll turn into a show with sculptural components.
Yeah, I don't know. It was something I was really drawn to. And with the sculptural components, I think it's going to be sort of a two-part thing. I think it's going to begin as probably a show of images, maybe some found objects. I plan to talk to people in the areas, look for oral histories, obviously being very sensitive to memory and what has happened there. And then I think I have to sit on it for a bit. I have a feeling it's going to be a very powerful experience. So I really don't know how it's going to take three-dimensional form yet.
It's exciting. That's exciting, and I would think a little daunting, too, because that research is, of course, very disturbing and hard to look at, I would think.
It is. It very much is, especially as someone who identifies as a woman and feeling sometimes very unheard. It can be, it's very scary to imagine that this isn't that far back in our history, and that a lot of these ideas still make up the fabric of our culture. We don't verbalize them in these kind of direct ways, but they're there. And so that, yeah, it feels very, very real to read the testimonies of the women. And even the testimonies are, we only have their words through the bias of their accusers. We don't have very many personal primary sources from the actual people who were tried. So, yeah, it, I don't know, the whole thing is a little, it can be very uncomfortable, but also exciting in terms of growth. Doing something outside of what you feel safe in your practice is always it's always good for you. It's good.
Well, and sure. I think it's good for the audience too, right? To look at, you know, things that we don't want to look at, perhaps
like how that
follows into how we're thinking today. I mean, that's spoken of a lot of parallel issue might be, you know, kind of systematic white supremacy that's talked about.
Absolutely.
Now is, because also the lynching was not long ago at all.
And, exactly.
And it's similar how those ideologies, those ways of thinking seem to continue to infect how we are operating now, unfortunately.
That's exactly so, it. Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
So tell me about the most recent show that was completed. What was the last show that you installed?
The last show was called The Lure, and it was basically, so I'm very interested in the relationship between power and the body, and I'm interested in how it manifests through intimacy and through language. So a lot of times my work is driven by a snippet of text or an expression, and when I was beginning this body of work, I kept coming back to sort of like sexual innuendos, and I found a lot of humor in them. So there's sort of a dark humor that pervades a lot of my practice. And so what I started finding was that I was really drawn to looking at how we've created the constructs of gender and nature, and we use them as a way to enforce power structures, and that there are links between hunting and courting. And you can trace those links and language to sort of look at the movement of power between bodies, both animal bodies and human-animal bodies. And the backbone of the show is really my interest in expanding the idea of body. How we define a body and who we decide gets to have a body is really human-focused. It's very anthropocentric. So, for instance, we give bodies to people. Like, so we say people have bodies, and we refer to animals as having bodies. But we often don't discuss rocks as having bodies, or something as intangible as light, or even really plants. They are much more objectified than people. We get to be subjects. So in this work, I'm sort of probing what we can see or understand as a body, and I'm working to reveal sort of points of overlap, moments where the binary between body and non-body, between male and female, plant and animal, self and other, subject-object, where these things sort of start to dissolve. And we can kind of begin to see ourselves in the other.
What does the work look like? So the work that addresses those issues, what does that work look like? What was in that last show?
Well, a really good example would be, I have a piece called You Excite Me, The Way Your Gaze Touches My Body. And what I did was I, over time, collected minerals that they fluoresce when they're exposed to long-wave ultraviolet light. So it's an interactive piece, and the viewer has a flashlight, and the light is sort of a surrogate for the viewer's gaze. And as you explore the bodies of the minerals using the light excites their electrons. Like, that's like the scientific term for when this happens, is an excitement of electrons. And when I found that out, that they have this internal excitement when they're exposed to this light, and then they sort of emit this fluorescence, I imagined it very playfully as kind of like a rock explosion of passion or a rock orgasm. And then you have, as the viewer, the rock is sort of excited by your gaze, by the voyeurism of it all, and you're without realizing it at first, implicated in kind of an emotional entanglement or a physical relationship with the bodies of these rocks. So it's my way to kind of play with ideas of pleasure and bodies and a human and non-human relationship, and just ask you to, as a viewer, kind of imagine a more expanded way of viewing how we interact with the world around us. And who deserves respect? By giving something else a body, I'm asking you to imagine a more equitable existence with it.
And how many works were in that show? Like, how was that installed? I mean, there'll be images of this perhaps in the interview, but yeah. Tell me a little bit about the materials and how you were building that.
Ooh, so there are a lot of different materials. I'm really driven by material. So when you enter the show, there's a wall of photographs, which we referenced earlier when I discussed the grant that I received from the city. And then there are sculptural objects that are hung. A lot of them are actually suspended from the ceiling. There's a lot of tension in the objects where they hover just above another form, like a large sort of spike form hovering above, like a soft, fleshy silicone form. There's a display case full of minerals that have, I have these sculptural objects I call dicklets, and they're made from sexy silicone, and they're cast from roots and fruits and different vegetables. And they sort of look like mushroom fruiting bodies that are growing out of these minerals, and that's in a display case. And
right, they're kind of very phallic-looking, all of those, aren't they?
They are rather phallic-looking, yes. And the minerals themselves are minerals that we have historically ground up and consumed as aphrodisiacs, which I find super fascinating. Consuming something hard to basically get hard, it's just, it's really, there's a lot of humor. It's
right,
funny. Let's see, and then there's the large Preserving My Desire piece, which is sort of the focal point of the back wall, and that's a work that's an ongoing project for me. I've been working on it since 2014. They're all discrete sculptural objects, but when they become installed, I sort of imagine it as like a world making where they all talk to each other and they all build on each other's meaning. So by experiencing this show in its entirety rather than a single piece, you get a much more holistic view of what I'm trying to communicate in the work. And that's probably due to how I work on them in the studio. I'm working on many, many things at once, and they're all sort of hung together, and they all talk to each other, and they come down, and they go back up, and there's a lot of pushing and pulling in the making process as well. And I think that comes through in the final display.
Yeah, it does feel like there's that kind of pushing, pulling process does come through. So just to maybe step back a little bit from that show, that work is a very unusual medium. It would seem not the easiest to collect. Is that work collected, and how do people respond to that through that last show?
So people responded, I think, very well. I got a lot of really positive in-person feedback. In terms of collection, that's a fascinating thing, the economics of the art world. So I was really surprised because the way I installed the dicklets, in addition to growing on sculptural forms, they also very sporadically would appear on a wall or on the floor, like individually growing as if there was a rhizome beneath the surface of all the architecture of the space, and every now and then its little head would poke through, and people really loved that. And I had extra ones that were available through a gift shop, the store that's attached to this space, and they sold very well. And my intention was to make them more economically feasible for people, so they were priced at a lower price point, and I was really surprised by how many people wanted to have a dicklet in their house. That shocked me. And then the framed works, I do silk drawings on silk, and they do pretty well as well in terms of being collectible. Otherwise, yeah, it's hard to get people to bring sculpture into their home because it takes so much space. It is very different to live with a dimensional object than it is to live with something on your wall.
Absolutely, yeah, that's true. I mean, I always think once that's true, it's difficult to live with a dimensional object that's not on your wall. And also, doesn't everyone have space for that because they already have stuff on their walls? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I guess it's a different kind of commitment to space.
Yes, I've thought about that too. It's also a commitment to caring for the object in a different way than you care for a framed work, because you have to dust it. And I know that sounds small, but when you think about that you have this sometimes very intricate sculptural objects, like how do you care for them? How do you make sure they stay safe and clean? And it becomes much more like a houseplant than just a passive thing that you look at.
Right. So true. Let me ask you the last question. What are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
Okay. I'm a big reader, and I read sort of the way I make work, so I read lots of different things all at once. Right now, I am reading a book called A Woman Looking at Men, Looking at Women. I'm reading three different Rebecca Solnit books, and the one that I am just most excited about is called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, and it's about, let's see, I have it right here because all my books are on my desk, but it's about indigenous scientific knowledge and the teaching of plants.
Thank you so much, Margo, for talking with me today. I wish you great success with this next body of work, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was wonderful to speak with you today.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.